You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a mystical, spiritual community radiating light and love, transforming consciousness. Our mission is healing lives, building dreams, and realizing God.
Good morning. Good morning. And welcome to Unity of Tustin. There is something sacred here. Did you read your little newsletter? Something beautiful, real, and true. These were the words that were just the beginning of the words of the songs that we sang together 2 weeks ago when we were together in celebration of our community. My name is Debbie Della Cuesta. I am part of your sabbatical team, and also I'm currently serving as your board president, honored to do so. And today is yet another special day. The wind of spirit is beckoning us to this sacred time of community, to this time of transformation. It's a time of being and becoming that instrument of the divine during this time of our sabbatical. So to begin today, I will be inviting us into the peace prayer of St. Francis. And it was interesting to dive into that a little bit. This is a prayer that has kind of come to me in different times and ways. And it's interesting here because the peace here is a translation of the word shalom, which has to do with wholeness, both at a personal and a relational level. So this prayer is about transformation, the movement away from darkness to light, away from despair into hope. It's about a direction of travel, a state of wholeness and well-being, rather than being about something that has already been arrived at. So in this spirit of wholeness, I invite you to pray this with me. If you know the prayer, I welcome you to join me. And so if you have not done so, I invite you to close your eyes and allow spirit to wash over you with these words. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, and it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. And so it is. Amen.
Now, today's guest speaker.
So back in 2000, the year 2000, I had joined Neighborhood Centers, Inc., a large social service agency in Houston, Texas. And we were just launching a capital campaign at the time that I joined that organization. The goal was to raise $18 million. And we raised $18 million in 18 months, pre-dot-com bubble burst, right? So part of that money, $11 million of that money, was designated to replace a community center, one of the many community centers that that organization ran. And this particular community center was in the Second Ward in Houston, in a largely underserved community, Hispanic community. And that building had been there for about 60 years. And it was a beloved community center. In fact, it was an icon in that neighborhood. And knowing that, the agency was very proactive and hired Diana Davila, who was a young woman that had been raised in Second Ward and spent her years growing up at Ripley House in the after-school programs and the summer programs. And she had gone on to Harvard and got her law degree and had even been elected by that community to the Texas House of Representatives to be the state rep for that community. And so Deanna spent about 4 to 5 months going all over the neighborhood, holding town halls and community meetings and asking for the community's input in what they would like to see in the building programmatically, what was going to be new, and getting information from them about what was important about what was the existing community center that they had. And then all that information was woven into the plans, and then she brought those plans back to the community for further comment, and all of that got sort of woven together into the what became the final plans, and we broke ground, and a couple of years later, we were finally able to have the ribbon cutting ceremony and open this incredible, brand new, $11 million facility for the community. And about 3 weeks later, we got a phone call. And about 16 people, including some important people in the neighborhood, had formed a task force. And they were requesting that the agency send someone out to meet with them. And my boss called me up and said, "You're going to be the one to go and meet with this group." And what I came to find out was that the purpose of the task force was to enumerate all the ways we had failed to deliver to them what they wanted in their community center. So after about three visits with this group, and working through their concerns and challenges, what it all boiled down to was that it just wasn't the same Ripley House. It just wasn't the same. And there was a sense of loss and a sense of grief that things had changed, even though they had changed for the better in many, many ways. And lest we think this is an uncommon occurrence and only happens in folks that don't hold the kind of consciousness we hold, a few years later, I had gone to work for the Unity Church in Houston as the executive director. And there, too, we were just finishing up a capital campaign, and we built a brand new sanctuary in a $7 million facility. And we, at that time, had about 1,500 people coming on Sundays. We had four services. We had overflow rooms with television, live streaming and what it was back in that day. You know, we would just broadcast to the televisions, and then we had a screen. And so we were so excited. We had this new facility now that we'd built in such a way to try to keep it feeling somewhat intimate, but we could have all of our church family in the building together. And about 3 weeks later, after getting a little bit of news from the birds that several parking lot conversations had been taking place, a group of people, it never happens here, right? A group of people showed up at the office quite upset. This was a group of people who had, in the past, come to church, gotten their cup of coffee, and sat down on the couch in the visitor center and watched the service on TV. And they were very upset that they could no longer do that, and they actually had to come into the sanctuary and participate in that way. So the fact of the matter is that this is human nature. This is human nature. We get attached to the things we know and love. And we have preferences. And some of those preferences are strong preferences. We often dislike change and the discomfort that change brings. But no matter where it shows up in our life, whether it's at home or at work, in our families, in our spiritual community, change is the nature of things. And transformation is all about changing and shifting. So perhaps a more interesting question for us might be, who will we choose to be in the midst of change? Who will we choose to be? Will we be the group that holds on and forms a task force? Or holds parking lot conversations? Or will we be those who choose to step forward and embrace the change that is arising and put forth an effort to bring the potential that's possible in that space of change? I love the metaphor of a garden because for me, it's a great way to look at what it is we're about when we're trying to coax growth forward, whether it's in ourselves, with those we love, or in our community. And so we understand if we're working in a garden and we are getting the help of several people to do that, that not everyone can be the one with the water hose. Some people need to pull weeds and some people need to plant seeds. We need some to place stones. And we need some to mend fences. At Unity, we recognize that just completing the task is not the important thing. I mean, it needs to get done. But equally important is the consciousness we bring to the work that we are doing. How are we completing those tasks? What is the underlying energy with which we are gardening? As you look around your life, you can see you have multiple gardens, right? You have the one here, you have your personal gardens, your work gardens. And so for all of us, the question is, what kind of gardener will we be, especially in the face of challenges? It always comes back to the question of our consciousness. We can either be the way of God or in the way of God. And so I have a fun little activity that I think does a nice job of illustrating what it means. Would you be willing to play with me a little bit at this activity? Sure. Okay, so it's not difficult. I'm going to invite you to close your eyes and allow yourself to call forth in your awareness someone that you absolutely love unconditionally, probably 4 feet or under the age of 2. So as you get this relationship in mind with this beautiful being that you love unconditionally, allow yourself to really feel that love pouring through you. And now I'm going to invite you to allow someone that you have a grievance with or an upset with or who irritates you or clearly done something inappropriate recently in your life to come into your awareness, someone that you find challenging. And let yourself go to the place of what it's like to be with that person. And notice what happens with the heart and the love. You might be very practiced and able to keep the love at the same level of flow, but for most of us, when faced with someone who is a challenge in our life, we find that that flow of love starts to shrink a little. And that's how we end up getting in the way of God, rather than letting that love being the way of God flowing through us. So you can bring yourself back into the moment here. When we say we want to be the way of God, the way you speak about here is to realize God, right? That's on your mission statement. And so it can be a challenge to do that when there is all kinds of unexpected circumstances arising in your life. And we need tools and techniques. In fact, this afternoon, some of what we'll be diving into are some very simple yet potent tools that can support you in keeping that flow of love open. When we bring the way of God to change, it allows us to move into the place of change from love, to move forward rather than seeking to go backward. But the truth is this, it will never be the same as it was when change is involved. And it's okay to feel sad and even to grieve. It's useful, important, and even necessary to grieve, so that we can move forward freely into alignment with what is arising. And because spirit is forever unfolding, we know that we're guaranteed opportunities to practice this, aren't we, in our lives? I've found in my life that there are three things that support me in being with change in a more mindful way. I call it tending my garden from three consciousnesses. The first is from the conscious of a clear mind, the consciousness of a clear mind. Then tending with an open heart. And the third is tending with loving hands. So when we're in the space of a clear mind, it's quite easy to embrace possibilities. We are free from the story that we can go back or that we should go back. We know that facing the limitless potential is the only answer. So in my life, a great example of this was when I was in my 20s, I had a 3-year starter marriage. Did any of you have a starter marriage? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so when that relationship ended, it was very difficult for me. Very, very painful. And what I noticed was that I didn't so much grieve the loss of the relationship. I mean, there were problems there, obviously. But I grieved the imagination, the way that I had planned my life, what I thought my life was going to be like. I grieved the future that I had imagined for myself, that was disappearing. And I remember distinctly thinking to myself, I have no idea where I'm going to be in 6 months. And that was so scary to me because previously I thought I knew where I was going to be. Of course, I didn't really know, but it seemed like I knew. I had a plan, you know, that's the way it was going to unfold. After going about my healing work, I was able to move into a place within about 6 months of saying to myself, you know what, I have no idea where I will be in 6 months. And that was exciting. It was an opportunity. It's in these moments where we have all that potential available that our soul is conspiring to bring us into wholeness, even when the journey doesn't feel good. We have to be careful not to confuse what is good with what is comfortable. And so I'm going to share with you a little bit, small reading from this book called The Soul's Conspiracy, written by Dr. Gary Simmons, who's my colleague. It's one of my favorite parts of this book. It says, "It is your soul and the souls of those who journey with you that have conspired to help you discover your innate wholeness and true worth. This leads to recovering from the illusion of separation. Whether you understand it or not, conflict helps you differentiate between who you truly are and who you are not, your false self, the part of you that lives in separation. Your soul's top priority is to bring you into relationship with those aspects of yourself that live outside of your wholeness. And when we do that, when we bring ourselves back into relationship with those parts of us that live outside of our wholeness, and we're able to expand ourselves, we become a more conscious gardener, a more conscious creator. And then that allows us to tend a garden next with an open heart, which of course can be very difficult if we've been hurt in the past. It requires deep trust and a willingness to be vulnerable. The heart asks us to care, to love, to want, even knowing that we may not get what we want. To love, even though we risk being hurt. Rumi tells us that we must keep breaking our hearts open until they open. And when the heart is open, miracles become possible. I'll share with you a story from this book that I think illustrates this well. Long ago in feudal China, there lived a compassionate and wise Zen master named Mundra. His mountain home was a host to many travelers and spiritual students, including abbots and monks from neighboring towns. Throughout the land, he was known as the master of unfathomable courage and presence. One day, news came to Mundra's village that Khan, a fierce and savage Mongol warrior, was making his way across the country, attacking villages and monasteries in his path, killing anyone who showed the slightest resistance to his reign of terror. Knowing Khan's particular hatred for holy men, the people of Mundra's village begged him to hide. Mundra, though he appreciated the concern of his followers and friends, waited at the village square for Khan's arrival. Days later, Khan stormed the village gates, and to his amazement, all had fled for safety, all but Mundra, who sat motionless in the afternoon sun. Infuriated by Mundra's defiance, Khan dismounted his horse, drew his sword, and placed the blade at Mundra's chest. "Don't you know, old man," growled Khan, I can run you through without even blinking an eye. Mudra, centered and serene, spoke directly. And sir, don't you know that I can be run through without even blinking an eye? In an astonishing moment, Khan lowered his blade and bowed at Mudra's feet, begging to be accepted as a disciple. Clearly, Khan saw the power and grace present in masterful non-resistance. So this is the call that's known as being a non-anxious presence. The world could use more of that, couldn't it? It's the highest form of leadership, leading from an open heart. For me, I just refer to it as being in presence. And it's a daily practice for me. It's a daily practice. And some days, I'm really good at it. And some days, not so good. And part of my call of being in presence means being compassionate with myself when I'm not doing it the way I wish I could do it, right? One thing that helps me with this is another little quick Buddhist story about a student who said to his master one day, "You amaze me how you are always centered." And the master chuckled and said, "Oh, no, not centered, always moving to center." And so if that is what we ask of ourselves, we can bring a kind of consciousness, a kind of open-heartedness, not only to the world, but to ourselves. And it has to start there. And once our heart is open, then we can move into the third way of tending the garden, which is with loving hands. And so as you celebrate as a community and reset and begin again, consider for yourself, how will you engage? How will you bring your loving hands forward? Presence is our commitment to show up with our mind, our heart, and our hands all in alignment. All in alignment. And as Debbie shared a couple of weeks ago, that great piece from Father Rohr, he spoke to the notion that God is in the relationship, right? In the space between. And that's where we have the opportunity to practice, to engage with our world. If we just sit back after we've gardened, open a bottle of wine, pour ourselves a glass, and spend the rest of the summer just wanting to enjoy the garden and don't get back into it, eventually it will become a problem because something is always coming into or going out of bloom. Or if we sit back and leave it to others to tend, we might not be as pleased with the results. But when we step forward and bring our loving hands into community, we become the strength of the stones and the warmth of the sun and the protection of the mulch and the life-giving flow of the water. And what we build is beautiful. When we bring forth that which we have to offer the world, and we do it with love and with an open heart, we begin to feel so lovable and so loving and so loved that we become love. And while what we build is new and different, it is ours and it is beautiful. And that is the opportunity before you as a community and in your own home and in your own heart. And that is the invitation and the wish that I have for you.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.